whole lot of talk. The interviews that rock. Brought to you by Rock Antenna, Germany's number one rock radio station.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for your time. What time is it where you are right now?
Oh, it must be 9 a.m. I just got back from Australia, so yeah. I'm on jet lag. I've been awake since 6 a.m.
All right, wonderful. My name is Julian. Good morning from Rock Antenna.
Hi.
Thanks for your time. I'm a big fan of the band since I was 6 or so. Let's talk about that later. But you said that you've been in Australia for a very long time. And now you spend some time at home and then you soon get to Mexico, I think. How do you handle these changing time zones and stuff? Is it all right for you?
It's hard. You know, right now it's just very difficult. We've got, you know, global marketing and a lot of stuff and a big spread out team around the world. So the business end is really a bummer. You have to think about timing and where you are when and during what releases and what if this is going to make an effect. And God, it's really difficult. The traveling part, I don't really care. You know, I don't care where I am. I like being at home with my family, but there's always melatonin if you wake up at 2 a.m. and can't get back to sleep. You can just always get back to sleep. Hey, so this is you're in Hamburg, but you yeah. sound like you're from Cologne or the Rhineland somewhere down
Me?
There.
I was born in Hannover, but that is a long time ago. Maybe my English is not so good.
It's because you have this sort of an accent.
Okay.
And it's not a very Hamburg accent at all. Yeah, interesting. I love the different I love the different ways that, you know, if you're in Bavaria, they have a different, they speak English with a different accent than Berlin does. And, you know, and it's, you know, it's been almost 30 years and it's that we've been traveling. So you learn and have friends from different places and you pick up their different accents in mostly, you know, their accents in English. I don't really speak much of any other language.
I'm the guy from Cologne now. I like that. When was the last time you have been in Hamburg? Do you remember?
God, I don't know. It's been a long, long time. I think we just go in and we play München and we play Berlin.
Yeah, this year in Berlin, but not in Hamburg. I'm very disappointed, but yeah, can travel to Berlin. How about the Australian English? You have been there like a month. You toured there for a month, I think. How about that?
I like Australia a lot. That accent definitely starts to wear you down. It's English. They're speaking English. But a lot of times, particularly the female high chirpy voices, really hard to understand, you know. And if you're on the phone talking to a hotel or something, it's like talking to, you know, southern France, it really feels like they barely speak English and you can't understand them and you have to go, I'm sorry, I missed that. Can you please repeat that? You must have dropped out. You know, I don't want to sound like you sound like it's, yeah, I really noticed it this time. I mean, perhaps I'm going a little deaf.
You know, no problem.
Been doing it. Playing rock and roll.
What would you say? What was the most heartwarming moment of your Australian tour leg?
You know, the show and putting your guitar on and you start playing your song, man. And they just, God, we've got such a great team. It's just a real machine that it's, you know, every night the shows just sounded so good and we felt great. And also the entire tour was sold out ahead of time. So the energy is high. When you get there, it's packed. Everybody knows that they got in and a bunch of people didn't. And I think that's something for an audience that's gratifying about that. It heightens the energy. And, you know, our Australian team of sound and crew and stage and lights and everything are a long-standing team that we've been working with forever. So it's pretty badass.
Nice.
Our American team, we have kind of a new team. Our Europe team is also a long-standing team. It's pretty much the same, and it's really badass too. So, yeah, we'll have our shit together. America, we're still kind of learning. We've got a couple people to plug in yet, mostly on our end, on the stage end.
And it works.
Yeah, but we get it done. We're good. We're very good live. We've been doing it for so long.
But there's one song that you play not so often, and it is a song, I need to say that now, Modo Sadistil from 2019. It's a song I absolutely love because it's very, very strange. It's the one kind of tune that pops in my head. Like every once in a while, I wake up, can drive a Ford. Every time, sometimes daily. And it's such a catchy masterpiece, I have to say. But you don't play it live anymore since a couple of years, do you?
We have 150 songs released on albums globally. And so, like right now, we're playing four songs off of our new record. And two of those will definitely go away. At some point, maybe three. You know, you got to play your history. You got to play your whole history when you've been a band for 30 years.
Did you have the energy or the time to celebrate this anniversary, 30 years of Danny Warhol's?
I don't know. I mean, how do you celebrate that?
Well, maybe with that tour right now.
It's just kind of the whole thing is like, every night we go, hey, you guys, 30 years. And everybody goes,
yeah. But a friend of mine turned 30. It was a huge celebration. And with the band, it's I think it's more crazy that you spend so much time together now and it works.
Oh, my God. Yeah. 30 years. Still, that's a long time to be married.
Yeah. Let's talk about your album. I really enjoyed it, I must say. And it reminded me a bit of good old indie rock from the 90s, especially some stuff by Beck. Do you hear that?
Right. Teutonic Wine.
Yeah, something like that. And also your attitude in your voice and all the sometimes the electric drum beats and so. Where did the inspiration come from for the whole album?
Well, we just started every song with a metal riff.
Okay.
They all start with a metal riff. Whether it's the song with Blondie that ended up sounding kind of like Nick Cave, Lee Hazelwood, Serge Gainsbourg-y thing, or Real People, which is blatantly Pantera. They all just started with a metal riff and then they kind of went whatever direction they wanted to go.
So you put the rock sentence in the center. That was the point, to make a rock album. Is that right?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's cool. You know, this one went Sabbath. That one went Ramones. This one went Pixies. That one went
Blondie.
Christian Death. You know, I mean, they're just, you know, they all just kind of went, they all go where your influences are and things that you loved. You know, you can't really escape that part of yourself as an artist. You will be regurgitating your influences no matter what you do. You should embrace them joyfully. And we basically embraced the parts of the 90s that we didn't like in the 90s. You know, there's a few more than a couple of those things that we didn't really like it. But now looking back, when we're not threatened or feel competitive with it, with these sounds, you know, with, you know, Pantera or Christian Death or whatever, now we can appreciate what was great about it and probably what we were threatened by, what was great about it, and not irritated as much by what wasn't cool about it, what didn't allow us somehow to open our hearts to it and embrace what they were doing or, you know, whatever at the time. But, you know, when you're young and you're an artist, competition is such a, I mean, you can be having real, you can be having what feel like real feelings, but really they're just petty, small fears and competitive baby bullshit, you know. And, you know, truth is often funny.
Yeah, and so is your music, I think. It's like, I really enjoyed it because it's like, not so, I'm very serious about my project. It's like more than like, yeah, let's try some stuff. And it's really cool. I don't know. You can describe it better, I think. But your attitude is like, let's try some stuff. You said that let's try some riffs and then we build some songs together. And I can hear that. I can hear that easygoing way to produce an album.
And we take a long time to do it. You know, we've always owned our own studio, even when it was in my bedroom, you know, on our first record. We don't go into a studio to record because that would be pressure. The time constraints would be, you know.
Not so natural.
Yeah. You know, back when we had a lot of hits kind of during this 1 5-year period of time. And then there was enough money to come in that I could buy things like that, like properties, and then build this, you know, build that massive place out into a studio, film production. I have a wine bar in the front. It's a quarter of a city block.
Correct.
And the wine bar supports, you know, taxes and utilities and all that kind of thing. Right. It is nice to have a great studio because I have to do so much business, you know, in my life as an adult now, that if we didn't own our own studio, I don't know that we would be able to spend enough time being artists to make truly great records anymore.
So you build your own environment around your life, and so you can do things.
Yeah, pretty much. I remember telling the band, I'm buying our future with this. We will be able to do this forever if I do this with $1.7 million or whatever it was that I had at the time. If I do this with it now, we will be able to do this forever.
Nice. More than 30 years now. Now you're in the morning. We have 6 p.m. The day is nearly over. But one song from the album that works very nice as an alarm clock, I think, and it's the opener. The Doomsday Bells. I ask myself when I see you right now, what kind of sound do you wake up to in the morning? Do you have a special ringtone on your phone? Do you have an old alarm clock or something like this?
Nope, I don't. I just wake up to the sound of worries and concerns that are ringing in my head.
All right. Crazy. Yeah. And the same about your cell phone ringtone? Also the Soros that calls you? Or?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Well, if I could have any sound, it would just be the sound of a giant and fully immersive ohm. Just ohm.
Oh, my Lord.
I just want an ohm, just a big cleansing and purifying ohm. Just surround me and carry me through each day. It's so brutal. Okay. And now, you know, I live in Portland, Oregon, where there's just these riots are constantly happening. Anybody gets wronged in the world anywhere, let's go to Portland and destroy it and show them how angry we are about Gaza. Like, oh, good. Oh, good idea. Okay, that's great. Yeah, it's just a nightmare. Nobody solving anything, just destruction, and nobody going there to try to fix it. It's so bad. Things were so much simpler, you know. I think my generation, the Generation X, we had a much simpler, and I liked how things were prioritized more. You know, we also had MTV, which which was bigger than politics, and it was, you know, it was on par with the biggest sports teams on earth. You know, Michael Jordan was more or less as famous as Bono. You know, but Bono is politically active and going and meeting with people and trying to help move things along and move the ball towards the goal line. He wasn't overturning cars and burning down poor family from Thailand's restaurant and only means of income to show their anger, to show how angry he was about apartheid. Yeah. You know, he went and dealt with it and tried to make decisions and helped Bruce Springsteen and everybody. Those guys were great, and MTV allowed that to happen. So having a great art platform be one of the most influential forces in global politics was, you know, and social politics, social hierarchy, celebrity, you know, all of that stuff. You know, artists were more respected that were greater artists. You know, you look who came out of that era was The Clash, the B-52s.
Oh, yeah.
Iggy Pop didn't get big until the MTV era. Mm. You know, The Cure, we're from the MTV era. We didn't have to concern ourselves with having hits. We just had to concern ourselves with making really great art, you know. Great, cool film, cool records, just make real cool stuff that you really dig and what you would want to hear. And then the music and the art itself will do the work. It will carry you. Now I can't even imagine how anyone would do it without, I just don't know anymore. It's like somebody put the entire music industry into a confetti cannon and pulled the ripcord and it just shot out in a million scattered pieces. And there's, you know,
so we need to talk a little bit more about the music. There are some big names on the new album. You know that Frank Black or Black Francis. How do you call him right now? Frank Black Francis?
Chuck.
Okay.
Chuck. His name is Charles.
Also nice. Yeah.
I like Black Francis. I just thought it looked real cool. But yeah, I think Frank Black is probably his most famous moniker. So let's call him Frank.
Frankie. Oh, so Slash from Guns N' Roses, very big name, and also Debbie Harry. How did that happen? Because in your on your older records, there wasn't any feature, and not very often.
Well, I mean, we've had Mark Knopfler from Dire Straits on a song. We've had a ton of people, but we just never really thought about putting their name as a feature in the title. You know, it's like just didn't occur to us. There's so many details in being a band and releasing records and shit that you can't think of everything. We're constantly amazed at how much we're getting screwed because we can't think of everything. Yeah, fuck, we've had everybody, man. Mike Campbell from Tom Petty's band and on the same song as that. And yeah, it's just been, you know, it's been really cool being the Dandy Warhols because, you know, Dinosaur Jr. comes through town and comes into the studio and plays on stuff, and Duran Duran and, you know, the New York Dolls. And it's, we really did turn out to be kind of a Warhol-ish. We have certain bands that we like and we approve of what they do and they like us, and then they want to come through and hang out with us. And maybe we have a chef come in and make lunch for us or dinner or whatever, have a party, you know, have the Strokes over.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whoever. It's
a huge scenario to have that option to work with so many people. It's very nice.
Yeah. You know, how it happens is you have your manager get a hold of their manager, and then, you know, like we tried to have Steve Martin play banjo on a track decades ago. And, you know, his manager was just fucking rude. Totally shined on our manager. Just, you know, yeah, it doesn't always work, but, you know, obviously Slash, Frank Black, and Debbie Harry were all like fans of the band and wanted to be on it. You know, I tried to get Richard from Rammstein.
Oh, right.
And, you know, and he was like, yeah, he said he wanted to, and he said he would do it, and he never did. Mm. So sometimes that happens where they're just too busy, and, you know, it just seems, I don't know. Yeah, I'll try to, you know, because it does take time. You have to get your engineer in line. You have to get the, you know, and you've got to organize your schedule to get in there. You don't know if you're going to be able to come up with something immediately that you're stoked on, or whether it's going to take a few different tries on different days before your head is in the game correctly. Mm. You never know.
Did you meet the three feature artists in your studio, or did you made it remotely?
No, I've met them and hung out with them at different times. Cool. But you just send, your engineer sends their engineer the files, and then they can just do it at their own leisure. And generally they'll, you know, I'll get an email or something saying, is there something you're particularly interested in? Like Slash wanted to know what we were in. And I just said, you know, I think I said Vietnam Vet, wah-wah pedal. And he is just such a mind-blowing guitarist. I did not, he's playing like these really cool Middle Eastern scales. And I just kind of thought, well, he'll, you know, it'll be kind of, you know, wah-wah. It'll be blues riffs. And it wasn't. It's so much more powerfully deep. God, I just was blown away. And a lot of his stuff is just textural, just two stereo tracks going wah, 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 wah. It's like just things I'd never heard him play before.
Yeah.
And so I mean, all three of those badasses are, what they added to those tracks are really like cool. I mean, Debbie Harry's voice, instead of me singing that falsetto high part, Debbie Harry's voice, it just elevates it to this angelic level. I mean, it really is insane. I couldn't stop. I still can't stop listening to this record. And
I think the cool thing about the record is it's still, every track is like totally Dandy Warhols. So everything works really well together. I really enjoyed it. It's crazy. Yeah.
That song order works really well. Every song sets the next one up correctly.
Yeah.
It doesn't kick it in the dick, you know. It sometimes you put the wrong song after this song, after that song, and it's just like, oh, your head is not in the right place for it, you know. So there is that. It's difficult sequencing an album. I mean, we've been doing it a long time, and obviously album sequencing and what the flow is, and just that the whole album is a trip on its own, is obviously of paramount importance to us.
You mentioned the track order, and I have another question about that wonderful working title, Dancing With Myself. It's such a fantastic song title. What was the funniest working title we ever had for a song? Do you remember? Was there a better one than that? Dancing with myself. Come on. That's genius.
That's pretty good. It's pretty Danzig on the ceiling. Yeah. You make me feel like Danzig. I don't know. I my brain doesn't do random access very well. I'm trying to think of other working titles, but working titles get buried, you know.
Yeah. Sometimes it's like when you open a project on the computer and you don't know how the song will be called, then you type something in. That's how I do it sometimes. And yeah, it's very crazy when you open the project. Ah, that one is that now. Okay, dancing. I don't know. Crazy stuff.
Yeah, totally. And, yeah, I'm glad that one just stayed right there. You know, we couldn't beat that title. It started out as Danzig or Backwards Danzig or something like that.
Yeah.
And then Peter just put Danzig with myself in there, and it just stayed. Because it was, you know, it was kind of this Danzig 4. You know, if you listen to just the... It has that Danzig 4 kind of somewhere between metal and industrial grinder kind of thing. And then for some reason, as we kept adding tracks, it just became more Pixies. It went into this Danzig meets the Pixies kind of thing, and then, which was great, because then I just thought, well, we should really get, you know, Charles Thompson on this. I happen to be good enough friends with him that for him I could just call him. Mm-hmm. You know.
What's your favorite rock song of all time? Is that an easy question or is it hard?
Oh, you know, like sometimes it just pops into my head, and I think a few weeks ago it popped into my head. Oh my God, that is absolutely without a doubt my favorite rock song of all time, and now I can't remember what it was.
Oh, okay. That's unfortunate. Okay.
You know, like, or the Danzig, talking about Danzig all the time, I've been listening to Twist of Cain endlessly, you know, so a couple weeks ago, I'm pretty sure I would have said, fuck it, Twist of Cain, and so anyway, it's my favorite. But it's not true. It was just true for those days. Yeah, greatest rock song. God, there's so many, you know. I mean, once every now and then you probably can single one out, but I can't right now, I guess. And I know once we hang up, I'm going to go, oh,
that one. That is it.
God, it was, you know, Blackout. Maybe Sweet Leaf, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Might be Sweet Leaf.
All right. What's next? Breakfast.
I have to go head up to my other house, and and I spend the majority of my life with my same people, friends I work with and have been friends with since my childhood. They're generally the salt of the earth. So it's there. You go.
All right.
That's as long as you keep a balance, I guess I'll make it through.
Greetings from Hamburg or from Cologne, from whole Germany, and I'm looking forward to see you in Berlin maybe this year.
It looks like we'll be there in September or October.
It looks like.
Hopefully that'll continue to be the case.
All right. Bye-bye. Have a good day.
Cool.
Greetings. See you.
Thanks for supporting us, man.
Yeah, I do. I do.
Awesome. Bye. Ciao.
Whole lot of talk, the interviews that rock. Subscribe to our channel for more rockin' podcasts.